Okay, so as all of you know, a lot of interest in the last 10 years about the networks and connected to geography, the whole World Wide Web links, and social networks, etc., are these nice examples of non-geometric graphs. Just to be different, I got interested in spatial networks, thinking of graphs, etc., but where sort of two-dimensional space matters. For definiteness, I think of vertices as cities. There are lots of real-world examples of spatial networks in very different academic areas. That's a telephone system, or electrical grid system, transportation systems. There's some literature I never knew about on what they call regional economics, that's basically spatial economics. Why are factories and universities and shopping malls where they are? Etc. So, so I want to study networks where geography does matter. I should say I do theorem probability, and I'm used to talking to people also interested in probability, so hence the last line there. What does this have to do with probability? And kind of what I'm really interested in, again, is a theoretician, is on finding some simple collection of toy models to think about for studying spatial networks, for doing some theoretical analysis of what an optimal network might be. So one place randomness comes in is just the sort of model, the disorganization of the real world model in homogeneity by just randomness, random points. And of course, the most standard example, which could have been studied under many different names, is a geometric random graph, where you just have random points in space, and you have a threshold distance C, and just say, well, it's going to be the edge between a pair of points, even if they're less than distance C apart. And again, as well as sort of moderate levels of interest in theoretical probability and statistical physics over the last 20 or 30 years as continuum percolation. This sort of subject got taken over by electrical engineers 5 or 6 years ago. So a seminal paper of Kumar thinking about the amount of information flow you can get through graphs like this where there's something like interference. As you can see, it's cited by 1500 people. These type of networks really are a big deal in the EE theory community. That's kind of background. I've been doing 3 particular bits of work, of which I'm actually only going to show 2 here. Anyone, the two people in the audience who are some avid readers of the Annals of Probability, the recent issue, and the third paper, which is an incomprehensible technical paper. Fortunately, the nature of this subject is actually the most interesting results I know, and the most elementary. So the sort of most interesting thing I'm going to tell you is a freshman calculus exercise. So basically, I'm dealing with some very sort of simple-minded, pure math questions about optimum design of networks, where one can give sort of order of magnitude, more or less the correct order of magnitude of quantities, and somehow this isn't obvious, at least until you do freshman calculus, or first year graduate calculus, or maybe a law vacation. Again, the sort of final bit of background. The sort of methodology I think about is having a network on n vertices. My theory is of studying n going to infinity asymptotics. Of course, this is different from what people who are economists or real engineers do, because real networks don't have huge numbers of vertices, but it's kind of the magnitudes I know, and of course this has to be kept in mind in any attempts at translating the math results in the real world. There's a kind of background scaling convention, density 1. So I have n points, n cities in a region. I think of my region as having area n, so it's independently of n. Everything's density 1. Everything's distance order 1 from its neighbors. And that's just a very convenient way of comparing networks with sizes. So my particular results actually come from, or partly motivated by, work of Mark Newman. So here's an old paper without the color slide, so let me tell you my version of what he's doing. Actually, the correct way of doing it. He thinks he was doing something else. So what he's done is taken around the United States, it's discretized into about 200 regions, so kind of a center point in each region. It's taken everything's population weighted, which I'm not going to talk about, but the average is population weighted. So these are sort of theoretical networks across a certain spectrum. So the idea is you want to want to design an optimum network in some abstract sense. You think of the cost of the network as its total length. That's a constraint. You think of how you want to use the network as you want to sort of transport things from one point to another point. The cost of transportation is going to depend on two factors, the route length and also the number of hops, the number of different edges you have to go along. So there's a penalty factor delta varying from 0 to 0.0, meaning no penalty for changing hops to 1.0 at the other end. And these are sort of different optimum networks under different sort of penalties for the cost, which you think of as a cost in time, like transferring from one leg to another. So the mental picture is sort of when you're driving on the freeways, there's very little cost to change from one freeway to another interchange. On the other hand, you know, if you order something from Amazon.com and it arrives on your doorstep 5 days later, you know, a very small portion of that 5 days is the object being sort of physically moving from the warehouse to you. Most of the 5 days, the delay is sort of sitting somewhere, waiting for the next leg of the journey. So that's the mental picture here, and of course what's remarkable about this, as lots of market co-authors point out, that these are sort of visually somewhat similar to networks we know and love or know and hate, as it may be. But firstly, if you had no idea what the actual interstate network of the US was, then if I showed you sort of the top left picture and the real one, you kind of couldn't really tell. So the top left one looks sort of like the freeway network. On the other extreme, we probably all know the story of Federal Express, which had this great idea in the 1970s of shipping packages overnight from everywhere to everywhere else via Nashville. So they had a hub in Nashville. This is a network which is very similar. The computer program here, but the hub at Cincinnati. So this is where there's a large penalty. And so even though going from Seattle to LA via Nashville doesn't sound so sensible, it actually is sensible for packages because of the cost of loading and unloading. And then backing off from less penalty, here we have a network with a sort of smaller number of hubs. Again, the computer programming, I hope without any prompting from Mark, picked out places like Chicago and Atlanta and Columbus and Philadelphia and Kansas for hubs. And again, you'll remember that in the 1980s, airlines started by Delta, went over to this model of having hub cities and doing air routes in and out of hub cities rather than a lot of direct source to destination flights. So this is kind of a very interesting picture as data showing that synthetic networks derived from some intuitive, very simple criterion are at least qualitatively matching real world ones. On the other hand, I'm a theorem-proof mathematician, so I look at this and say, well, can I prove a theorem somewhat related to this? And so what I'm going to talk about is theorems somewhat related to this. So here I'm kind of saying more or less the same thing that Newman and Gaster are saying. I'm thinking of the cost of a building or operating a network as the total length. I'm introducing this parameter delta. I'm kind of saying this just for definiteness, so you're not really supposed to need to remember anything here. But precisely, I think the time to go from a source xi to a destination xj, depending on these two factors, the sort of total route length and the number of transfers, the number of hops, I want those to have the same order of magnitude as n gets large, so I need to scale. Again, I'm working in the square of area n and the square of side length n to the half, so I have to sort of normalize route length by n to the half to make it order 1, and then the number of transfers is order 1, and my delta is weight factor order 1. So this is just a little scaling that makes the two effects be comparable when n is large. And again, you go by the shortest time route, that may not be the shortest distance route between I and j, and then looking at statistics, the metric on the network, the average over all source distillation pairs, there's a time gn, from time to use the network, from the user's point of view, and it's guided by definition from larger than the average distance, because the average, the normalized average distance between cities, average straight line distance between cities, is something we build it in. So essentially there's a kind of two parameter optimization question, because we can choose the total length of the network, and again we're choosing this weighting parameter delta. And so I want to think theoretically, you know, what's the best we can do at designing a network to minimize the sort of time it takes when you're penalizing transferring from one edge to another. And let's sort of start off with one way you might just think of building a network, and just because it turns out to be an interesting case, the most interesting case is to think about a network where in the limit you're going to have three hop routes, so you're going to change planes twice. Thinking about that kind of long plane trip from Santa Barbara to Ithaca, you're going to change planes twice. So here's one natural map construction. So all my cities are in square area n. I'm going to divide that in subsquares of some size to be determined later. I'm thinking of a hub. I could either sort of choose one of the cities each subsquare near the center, or just put in an artificial vertex that sends me each of the subsquare. And then my network has this very simple hub and spoke style. So all the hubs in the center of each subsquare are linked to each other, and every individual city is linked to the hub in its own subsquare. So there's our cute freshman calculus, which I'll do on my let me show the picture and picture and get out a little pen. So, right, so we're dividing into subsquares, and then the idea is I'm getting little spokes from each city to the nearest hub, and then a different color, sort of prepared this a bit better, low-tech things, and we're just sort of putting straight lines between each pair here. Okay. Imagine continuing that. So this is just one type of network can do, and let's just think about what the total length of that network is. So I'm going to write a couple of things on the board just for fun. So length of short edges, order of magnitude. How many short edges do I have? I basically have one short edge for every city. If I have n cities, the length of the short edges in order of magnitude is L, my subsquare length. So my length is n times L. And then long edges, the order of magnitude of length. Well, how many hubs do I have? I have n over l squared hubs. The easiest way of thinking about that is each subsquare has area l squared, and my total area is n, so I need n over l subsquares, n over l hubs. I'm putting a long edge between each pair of hubs, so I have order n over l squared pairs of hubs, and now my order of magnitude of the edge length between them is the order of magnitude of the big square times n over half. I now have a cute Fechner calculus problem, which is to sort of minimize the sum over L. Minimize the sum of those two things. I don't try and do that on the blackboard, but it turns out that the answer is a minimum value scales as n to the 13 over 10, and the optional and the optimal length scales as 3 over 10, plus those numbers in, see the answer. And people who sort of have the intuitive feeling this kind of fabulous problem, know that you know, the optimum value is all those magnitudes of the short edges, like total length of short edges, long edges has to be the same.
You were optimizing the sum over all ij's and distance, this weighted distance of, from I to j?
I'm choosing the value of L to minimize the total length of this network.
I see, so you don't optimize from the user point of view, which was your...
We're doing two things, okay, you're right, I mean, there's sort of, we're optimizing from two points of view, so in other words, we're trying to both optimize the length of the network and the time for users to take it. So, you know, we can think of one as a constraint and one as a goal of the thing. But at the moment, I'm just thinking of, the cost of making a network is here. So the point is that this is a network whose cost, total length, scales to 13 over 10. And of course, we've made it such that, you know, you get from a typical point to a typical point in three hops. We sort of fixed that number by number 3 from this particular time of construction. Also, on the large scale, you're more or less going in a straight line, so there's no sort of inefficiency as far as the route length is concerned. So this is one little construction that then gives you this odd scaling factor in the 13 over 10 type of factor, three hops, not another one. The first thought is that this is such a weird answer that it can't be the right answer, so maybe there's some other construction that does it better. It doesn't take you long to sort of intuitively realize that you can't do better than this. And you know, in the paper is a sort of hack, 1.5-page proof you can't do better than this in orders of magnitude. I kind of love an elegant proof because an elegant proof could be better. It would be a nice American Monthly paper, but all I have is a hack proof, but this is sort of the right answer. So, you know, normally I don't go in much for elegance. Okay. So, and again, there's actually no randomness here. The same construction works wherever the cities are. And basically, even the worst case configuration of cities, we can. You know, the first thing is saying that average number of changes is 2. So the net cost for users is just a two delta. Changes, and we get the total length of the network 13 over 10. And then the theorem, I won't say more precisely, is for really two dimensional sets of points. In order to prove lower bounds, you need to constitute something about where the cities are. If they're all in a straight line, it'd be a one dimensional problem or a two dimensional problem. But up to technical things like that, you can't do better. But of course, there's nothing magic about 3. So let me kind of say what happens when you do this with other numbers. Something slightly weird happens. And this is one way of parameterizing things. So I'm sort of optimizing by kind of fixing the cost to the user. So I choose the value of my weight parameter delta. I choose the value of average hop numbers. Subject to that, which is the identity of minimizing the total length of the network. And something slightly odd happens at first sight. The first thing, the value of delta doesn't matter asymptotically, and that there's all orders of magnitude of the length of the network kind of just change the integer values of the average hop number. So our magic number, n to the 13 over 10, yeah, we can get rid of 3. It turns out that even if you allow the average number of hops to be 3.9, you basically can't do better in the order of magnitude. Values.
Is there an easy way to understand why that's true? Why it?
Yes, and it's just because when you don't have enough, you know. So if I try and do better than my three hop network, basically it means that some. Somehow connecting only some fraction of the hubs kind of doesn't work. because you can't save money by collecting only some fraction of the hubs, because that kind of immediately increases the average hub number. So it's something for the not too exciting reason, once you think about it. Okay, so the final thing on this question is, again, going back to Mark's nice pictures. Again, it isn't so easy to relate this result to Mark's nice pictures, but what's actually happening is kind of he's changing this from 2-parameter question into a 1-parameter question by kind of implicitly combining the kind of constraints from the user point of view and the constraint from the network design point of view. Another way of saying that is that he's the actual cost to the users is depending on the actual product of the average hop number times the penalty for the hop. So essentially, the picture he's showing is kind of going down a parabola like this, where the sort of cost to users is being maintained, and he's explicitly changing the value of delta. So he's kind of showing snapshots from different points along this curve, and that's why we're seeing the qualitatively different behavior, or at least that's the sort of end to infinity limit behavior explanation of what's going on, which of course may or may not be very accurate, which is n equals 200. Okay, so that's the first one, which is cute. The second thing I'm going to talk about is actually even simpler than that level of a mathematical model, and it's, once you say it, it's rather, it's not a question that could have been asked 100 years ago, and it's pretty bizarre that, as far as I know, nobody has really thought about asking this question before. So I'm getting back to the same idea. I've got the n cities that's going to area n, reading a network, thinking of the cost of the network, so as a builder or operator, as a total length of the network, and I want the benefits to be through some notion of shortness of routes. So if you are Julius Caesar's engineer, he's just conquered Gaul, and the Romans, so the first thing they have to do is build a good network of roads, and so you have some budget, so you can build 2,000 kilometers of roads in Gaul, and that's a good way of building them from one place to another. Again, your sort of goal is to have, typically to have your route distance between the fair cities to be not much longer than a straight line distance. So there are two obvious extremes here, that you can just do a complete graph, you just do a straight road from everywhere to everywhere else, but of course that gives you an absurdly long network. And the other extreme, if you just want to have a connected network, a minimum total length of the network, you don't care about distances between points using the network, then by definition the shortest length connected network is a Steiner tree, kind of well understood object. But of course a Steiner tree is very inefficient as an actual communication network. Here, stolen off the internet somewhere, is a Steiner tree on 1,000 random points, and so that's the minimum length connected network on these points, and obviously it's a road network to go from here to here, we're kind of wandering around maze-like somehow, and not good. So the question
is,
sort of,
this is not growing.
This is all static.
Here
I have a fixed number of cities here. Yes, so I'm not quite in the spirit of the meeting here. Yes, I hope nobody would notice that. Okay, so what's interesting to me is that when I started thinking about this problem, there's a first intuition which is totally wrong. So let me tell you my first intuition. Yep. The total length is order n, because everything is order 1 from its nearest neighbor. So the typical edge is just order 1. So the total length scales as order n. Again, it's widely believed that typical distances are fractal. So the distance within the tree between points of distance, the Euclidean distance L, it is widely believed to go as the power of L. Know that. Okay, so I want to think of some theoretical ways of measuring how efficient a network like this is as a road network. And the obvious thing to do is, you know, for each pair of cities, I and J, there's a straight line distance, there's a route length. The route length is bigger than the straight line distance. First thing you might think to do is look at the ratio, route length to a straight line distance. That's bigger than one, so we subtract one. So if this, if we end up here as 20%, that's saying that a route length is 20% longer than a straight line length. So the first guess is that, say, suppose I allow you to be, from some factor, to allow you to design a network whose total length is, you know, a bit more than the length of the sine of 3, 50% more, or 30% more, or some fixed percentage more, not depending on n, then, well, you'll be counting the straight line between every pair of cities, and intuitively, this type of average ratio, we should want to be able to get down to a constant, to 0.2. So that's one guess. The trade-off is sort of a constant factor. Longer total length from the sine of 3 gives you some constant factor for this ratio of excess length relative to the straight line length. It turns out this is wrong in the sense that we can do considerably better than this. So let me sort of say this in a different way. Let's say this, intuitively in a different way. Again, I mean, n cities are square of area n, so typical straight line distance is log n to the half. So this is saying that our route length would be sort of smaller, would be longer than straight line length by, you know, 10% times 10 to the half, typically. And this is saying that the total length of our network would be, again, a constant times n, longer than the sine of 3. And what's slightly amazing is that, in fact, we can have networks whose length is little on longer than the sine of 3. So the sine of 3 is a constant times n. We can have some negligible extra length. And we can make the average increase in this route length compared to straight line distance. Again, remember, straight line distance is n to the half. But we can make the excess length basically log n, or pedantically, or something going necessarily faster than log n. And this is just something which nobody ever believes when I tell them the first time. I say it twice, I won't mind saying it twice, but it's like one of those magic tricks that looks mysterious when you say it, but of course it's obvious when you see how it's done. So I'll sort of give the game away instead of saying why this is, instead of making it look too mysterious. Before I do that, again, could we do even better than this? There's a particular construction I'll show you that does this well. Again, for arbitrary city positions. To get a lower bound, again, you need some assumptions that your cities really are two-dimensional or one-dimensional. And we can't get quite the same lower bound. So again, under the same assumptions, they're only just longer than the sine of 3. The best you could possibly do is order log n to the half. And it's a kind of open question. I think it's a harder open question. Random points, and this is the real answer, log n to the half or log or somewhere in between. We don't know that. So the cute part is the construction. Sorry, the open problem? Okay, the open problem is the gap between. So if you assume, say, that efficiency is a random, then the issue is sort of overall networks, how small can you actually make this, subject to the length constraint? So there's construction that gives us log n, but conceivably you're better than that. We just know for an abstract argument we can't better than the root of log n. Okay.
What do you think is the right answer? Do you think it's root log n or log n?
I don't have any. I don't have any sharp idea. I think it's probably the log n, just because the construction's cute and it's hard to think of any better way of doing it, whereas the lower bound is hard, and somehow we found an argument and stopped, and if a smart person spent 3 weeks on it, they might find another argument that did better than ours. Okay, so here's the magic trick of designing a synthetic network, which is, and of course, this is artificial because you want to think of n as just being very big, so you actually have to imagine this extended to the UCLA campus scale. scale, like think big, and what we're just going to do is superimpose a sort of kind of sparse, a low density set of completely random lines in random directions, which don't really pay attention to the cities at all, and now use that as our network. So the idea is that if I wanted to start off here, at one city, I want to get to somewhere on the other side of campus, then basically I can just sort of wander around arbitrarily in this tree, so I get one of the lines, I then go in the lines, I just go in the right direction along that line, occasionally across another line, if that line's going closer to the direction I wanted it to go, I just follow that line. So that's the sort of cheating network, and the point is that the extra length I'm adding compared to the Steiner tree length just depends on the density of these lines. I can make that small as I want, and as long as n is very large, so I'm going a long way, I pretty soon find a line going in the right direction. My total length isn't much longer than the straight line length. Spanners, what's a spanner? Okay, we're doing better than constant. I mean, we're getting down to 1 plus below 1.
Yeah. There is an ocean.
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, this is just, we're not doing anything clever here. We're just going down random straight lines. We're not actually doing any clever sort of geometric arguments. And again, one could presumably do the construction with deterministic positioning of lines, just the cuter term, but my taste to do it with random lines. Again, every probability book has a little section on the sort of Pascal point process that's a model for random points. Large books that have footnotes will often have a footnote on this process, the sort of Pascal line process. I've always wanted to write a paper using the Pascal line process. Do that. So that's the construction of the.
So how do I think of this random line? So I choose a random direction. I mean, how does I get wrong?
Well, there's a again. It's a kind of it's a sort of natural measure on lines from an integral geometry point of view. There's one measure invariant under Euclidean transformations. The naive way is just they cross the x-axis at the points of a Poisson process and at a certain angle which isn't uniform, but it's density cos theta or sine theta or something, whatever what it is. And the slicker way of defining it is actually that if I look at the origin, any line, I can sort of parameterize a line by the sort of the distance to the point that makes the right angle and angle, and it's actually uniform distribution on this r and theta in this parameterization.
Wait, but what is the uniform distribution on z y?
The big measure. Uniform. Uniform measure, not right? Uniform measure. Yeah, so that's a kind of sick way of doing it in a uniform way. And again, it's a very classical kind of integral geometry from 1900. Translated into probability terms. Say it again? No, there are an infinite number of lines, because we just do the construction in infinite space, and then we just chop down to our n by n square. Again, the issue is the sort of density. If you're fixing sort of a low density of lines, in other words, the total length of lines per unit area, you're kind of making that you make that get small as n goes. Make that go down slowly then, and that means that the total length of the network you're adding becomes negligible.
So is the point that you can make the lines dense enough so you don't spend forever getting from the point inside the
distance to the edge? If the density of lines is constant, then it would kind of take you a constant time to get to a boundary, and so by making density go down very slowly, the time to get to the nearest line is increasing very slowly, but you can kind of make that as slow as you like. Okay. And there's just a cute little picture here. I gave this sort of intuitive navigation story for you're using long straight lines. There's actually a better story when it comes to do the calculation. These are simulations of this line process, but with the x and y axes scaled very differently. What I'm doing here is I'm adding it wanted to go from one city to another city, ignoring my line process, but I'm then erasing any of the lines that actually separate those two cities. And I'm kind of expanding the y scale so you can see what's going on. So now the remaining lines, of course, partition the plane into polygonal regions. And so you just look at the polygonal region containing our two cities. And of course, there's a route from one city to another, kind of going on top or a route on bottom. So the shorter of those routes is less than half the perimeter of this polygon. And again, the perimeter of polygons are things that actually have explicit formulas for, some four-dimensional integral that tells you exactly what the expected length of the perimeter of this polygon is. And so that's the kind of actual analysis we do to figure out these route lengths. And again, it comes out to be a cute answer that let me do this construction. I take two points the large distance x apart, throw down my random straight lines, now I'm phase one, cut out the ones that separate the points, look at the mean perimeter, the mean boundary length of this component. It has to be bigger than twice x, of course, but the excess we eventually calculate how it grows is 8 over 3 log x, and this is somehow exactly where our log factor is coming in, just a calculation. Yeah. Well, so to get the there's some math, some 100-year-old integral geometry to do this calculation, but otherwise the construction is simple. So the last thing I'll say is just again it's technically slightly subtle thing is the final result is basically says that we can't do much better than this, or at least if I may, any network subject to some technical condition, something two-dimensional. What we are cared about is the network just being much longer than the sine of a tree, which is the same as order n. Somewhat bizarrely, after we did the argument, we realized we didn't really use that assumption. The argument just requires on the network to have length bigger of n, so it might be a different constant. If any such network, the average sort of excess route length over straight line length has to grow at least as fast as long to a half. These types of things are sort of interesting to mathematicians. It's a general feature in algorithms. If your question is, how well can an algorithm the problem do? Well, then show it can do at least as well as something that just have to exhibit an algorithm that does that well. That's to prove that if no algorithm can do better than something, we can't do that by exhibiting an algorithm. We use some sort of abstract argument. So here, to show that no network can do better than this claim, somehow we need an abstract argument, not for a particular network given just by an algorithm, but just any possible network. It requires a bit of thought to get to grips with how do we do math for some arbitrary network where we just know its total length. But it turns out, and anyone who's ever taught the phone's needle example will sort of kind of remember what's been going on here, which is that there is something you can say about a plane network sort of just from knowing its total length. Basically, what you can say is you can say something about the positions and angles of intersection of a random line with the network. Basically, because of additive expectations, a network of length a million is just sort of a million line segments of length one. So anything you know about expectations in the line segment of length one, you just multiply by a million. You have an expectation line for a network of line a million. And basically, what now happens is that I've got sort of a black box network. I've got some network in my very large square. And all I tell you about the network is the total length of it. So now say if I take sort of a random line here, then that's going to, there are going to be places where the edges of the network intersect that line. But basically I know exactly, you know, there's, I guess, this sort of exact formula, I mean, up to sort of trivialities about edge effects, etc. There's basically exact formula for the density of intersections. We know, and also the angles at which the edges intersect. So the level of means, we know the mean density of intersections, we know the mean angles of the intersections, just from the fact that we are intersecting with a random line. So the network has a length. This is kind of fact two, so we're doing a tension between two facts, the fact of an arbitrary network, and I want to consider a sort of hypothetical network that's very efficient in this sense. So what do we know about the network with the property that for a sort of a typical pair of points, there's a route in the network whose length is only a bit larger than the straight line length. Well, again, I'm going from here to here. So I've got a network from there to there. So firstly, if my route from here to here sort of went some long way away from the straight line, then that's what Pythagoras is here. If it goes through here, its length is at least that plus that, and that can't be too large because our background assumption is that the route length is much larger. So the first thing is that the route can't diverge too much from the straight line path. And of course, the second thing is if my route was going up and down like this, the kind of length would be square root 2 times the length. So the route can't be from going up and down at 45 degree angles. So when you think about that, the conclusion you get is that if I take a start and a typical start and destination pair of cities, again, this is the inner network, which is efficient in terms of short routes. If I look at sort of a random orthogonal line, orthogonal to the line between the cities, then, again, our route has to cross here somewhere. We basically have constraints both on the distance from here to the intersection point, because, again, it can't be up here, otherwise Pythagoras tells us the route is long. And similarly, the angle at a typical point has to be, the angle here has to be close to 90 degrees, otherwise, from this argument, comes into play. So now if we think about what we're doing here, we're measuring a hypothetical network that has sort of, you know, some bounded length under some suitable normalization and which is efficient here, then we now got these somewhat opposite properties. On the one hand, that when you take a particular set of random lines, that's a random line gotten by first picking two cities at random and then having a randomly positioned line orthogonal from a line between the two cities, these are, again, sort of lines at a rooted point here, lines at a distinguished point. And we must have this special property that rather close to this point, there's an angle that there's an angle with the network that's close to 90 degrees. On the other hand, just from the sort of abstract properties of arbitrary network, when I intersect the network with a random line, firstly, there's sort of a lower bound on how the points can't happen too quickly, there's a bound on density. And also that angles are random, so they're unlikely to be too close to 90 degrees. And now it's the sort of tension between those two facts. These are saying opposite things, and that's giving us a constraint on how small the equation makes less length. So it's a kind of slightly seven-page argument, and you might have all the details, but that's the actual idea here. And, okay, I think I'm just going to stop. Thank you.